Stephen.
Hello, Stephen.
How are you doing?
I'm much better than I was last week.
Yeah, I think, I would say a lot of us are. Probably the majority of the people who listen to this podcast are feeling better than they did last week. Certainly less trepidatious. There may be some people listening to the podcast who were disappointed with the outcome, but I suspect they're in the minority. Nonetheless, they're there. And I'll tell you, I've both been surprised by the aftermath and not surprised at the same time. Not surprised because Trump had signaled from his first campaign that he wouldn't accept any election result that showed him losing. So him doing everything he can to kick and scream and claim fraud, that was already telegraphed by him, and especially strongly during this campaign. So that what he's doing with these nonsensical legal challenges doesn't surprise me. What did surprise me is that the U.S. didn't degenerate into a bunch of riots when Trump lost. I really thought that with the amount of tension that had built up on election night, that Trump losing would have triggered civil discontent. And it didn't, and that may be because the ending was not a snap ending, but was a slow denouement. I think that it was hard to maintain that passion. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, I saw the all of the people, all the stores and businesses in various cities, like, Washington, D.C. was one of them, and some of the other kind of hot spots where there has been riots and trouble and protests and counter protests over the last year. They were putting up boarding over their glass and battening down the hatches like a hurricane was coming, in anticipation that there was going to be civil unrest. And, what broke out was jubilation in the streets. I mean, it's like when Saddam was finally deposed, everyone went out and they were dancing and there was music and, it was very peaceful. It was just very joyous. And, clearly those were not the Trump supporters who were out in the street. So this whole idea of, Antifa and the violent radical left, and, they're going to use it to seize the means of production and all the rest of the stuff. It just turned into a big street party. Ding dong, the witch is dead, sort of. I mean, he's still kicking. But the civil unrest didn't happen. And, the armed insurrectionists, I mean, I'm sure they're still sitting in someone's basement somewhere waiting for the recounts and all the rest. But historically, whenever a strongman disappears, because it is a cult of personality, when the personality kind of has the stuffing kicked out of it, the supporters just kind of fade off. I mean, they nurse grudges, and it's not like that whatever ugliness that was behind Trumpism is dead, because 71 million Americans voted for him, whether it was for Trumpism itself or for some boutique issue that they were in favor of. Mm-hmm. Whether it was local or a lot of people, I always hate to do the Hitler comparisons, but lots of people voted for Hitler not because of the Jewish thing, but in spite of the Jewish thing. I mean, they liked other messages, and that's why they did it. And I'm sure there's a lot of Trump supporters who were small government or small tax, or they were mad about one little issue somewhere, whether it was coal or something else, and they don't have a lot of passion about the rest of the stuff. So for them, it was like losing on an issue. But 71 million of them voted for Trump. But they stayed home, in the days following the election. They weren't out with their arsenal of weapons. They were not, burning things, looting, lynching, beating up on anyone who they thought was Antifa. So it was, I was pleased by the calm, even though Trump continues to try to whip things up with his, dragging this out as long as he possibly can with every bogus claim and every ridiculous tweet that he can think of.
Well, I think that, there were people out there. There were Trump supporters who were gathered around the vote counting areas, the returning offices, as we call them here. And they were, it appears there was some intent to intimidate, but they were out there because I think that they were prepared to be out, and they weren't expecting a non-answer they were expecting something decisive, at which point their action would be decisive. But when nothing decisive happened, and it was just sort of a slow letting the air out of the tires of the Trump machine, they lost that enthusiasm. And like you said, they went home. They were no longer supporting a winner. They don't like losers. And Trump became a loser. But I think that the thing that's very disturbing to me is how many Americans did vote for Trump. I mean, tens of millions of Americans voted for Trump, which means that they were giving the okay to all of the horrible things that he did, all of the horrible messages that he sent. They're okay with it. They may not have been 100% supporters, but they were okay with it. Okay enough to cast a ballot in his favor. And I don't care what excuse people use to justify voting for Trump. Voting for Trump was giving a pat on the back to the way he governed for 4 years, which was, it was execrable. It was a terrible way to govern. It divided the country more than it ever has been since the Civil War. It put kids in cages. It caused his negligence caused, you know, probably many of the deaths to COVID. We don't know how many deaths there would have been had he acted and taken actual leadership on the issue, but you can be sure that there would have been less than there are now. It was an unmitigated disaster, his term, and yet people were saying, and not to mention the white supremacy, the race relations, the breakdown in race relations, the support of white supremacist movements, and people were saying, yeah, I don't care so much about that. I care about my taxes or whatever their issue was. And that level of selfishness is something that I think is rather uniquely American in the proportion that we saw it turn out.
No, it's absolutely right. I mean, and some people, you know, obviously cared about one issue and one issue only. And, you know, they'll talk about whether it was the, some of the few, accomplishments of the Trump era, because there were very, very few when you go back and look at it. Mm-hmm. They like, the brokering of the a fairly lopsided peace deal in the Middle East, maybe, or his support of evangelicals or stacking the courts or something like that. But, you know, aside from that, you know, it was 4 years with very few accomplishments. And a whole pile, as you said, things on the other side of the balance, you know, both personal and political, as an individual. I mean, you can't imagine a more corrupt, venal, dishonest, unlikable person as Trump, just in the way he deals with people. He's duplicitous, the way he fires people on Twitter, the way he demands absolute fealty, the way, he requires people to continue to mouth absolute absurdities, just because, he has said something that is clearly wrong and no one wants to contradict them, so they're all forced to look like idiots repeating the same sort of thing that Trump starts the chain letter of. With all of the stuff that went on, the white supremacists and the failure to denounce things, and his crazy use of the word socialism, and his stirring up civil unrest, that there were still people who wouldn't repudiate that is, it's inconceivable to me. But you and I are very different kinds of people. We're clearly not the Trump camp. We're not alarmists. We're not people who are scared by the socialist boogeyman. We believe that Black Lives Matter has a point. That race relations in the United States are at a very, very sad turn over the last 4 years in the United States. And that, then we have COVID, in the way that they've denied the science, and the way they've not just bungled COVID. I mean, I'm prepared to give, any government a bit of a pass on the first couple of months of something novel like this as everyone comes to grip with it.
Yeah.
But you learn, you listen to the experts, and you get better at it. And Trump not only didn't learn, he refused to learn, and he went the opposite direction from the advice that he was given. And was proud of the fact that he was driving America, to the point now where there's, over 100,000 new infections a day. The death count is climbing steadily.
It's approaching a quarter of a million people.
Yeah, Yeah, and it doesn't hasn't required anybody in that administration to rethink their approach to it. We've got a little bit of that going on in Ontario and Alberta right now too, because they just refuse to do what is clearly necessary because it's politically unpopular or ideologically not the way they want to go. That's the kind of stuff that you look at and you go like, well, how can anyone give that a seal of approval? And as we said, 71 million Americans, at the last time I looked, it was the popular vote was 49.5 to 49%. Biden only up by 0.5% of American voters. And you
Which
go,
translated to about 5 million votes, I believe. Four
yeah,
million
yeah.
votes.
It's 4 or 5 million votes. And you go, surely, like, how bad does it have to get before American voters say, you know what, this is crazy. I don't care what the party is. I don't care what the politics is. I'm not voting for more of this. But the United States, just said, no, I'm going to stick my hand back in that meat grinder for another 4 years.
Well, to me, it puts the lie to the notion that America shares these values of democracy and sobriety in leadership and responsibility and public decency. The interesting thing is that you'll find a lot of the people who voted for Trump are the kind of people who would express disgust for any form of lifestyle that they determine is not right. But they will also support such a horrible man and his terrible lifestyle. It's like they've turned off, they're doing doublethink. They're not really processing it. And they don't really care about democracy. They don't really care about so-called American values, truth, justice in the American way. They don't care. They don't even care about elections in a sense, because they're willing to vote for somebody who is leading them towards an autocracy. So to me, it exposes the lie that America is this shining beacon of democracy, the most successful democracy in the world, blah, blah, blah. No, it's not. It's people there do not revere democracy. They do not revere decency in their public leaders. They do not revere kindness, and their arms are not open to immigrants. They are not. That is a myth about America. Maybe it always was a myth, but it's certainly been exposed to the light of day as being a myth. Americans no longer believe in what used to be the American way.
Well, and what you said about doublethink, I think is really true, because there's such a disconnect, and this is one of the reasons I think it's so difficult to get through to Trump supporters, and in Canada, some of the more extreme of the right and probably also the left, people who are so mired in their own world that you've got these things like Trump is law and order, he's going to bring back law and order and all the rest, and then you go like, well, Trump's administration has the most criminal indictments of any administration. Going back before Nixon, I mean, there's been 215 criminal indictments of the Trump regime, which is dwarfs Nixon's 76 and Reagan's 26. Obama had zero, Carter had one, Clinton had two. But Trump wraps himself in, well, we're law and order, cleaning the swamp, we're draining the swamp, and people still believe it in spite of all this evidence. And if I like to think of nothing else, I'm a bit of a rationalist. I like to see evidence. I like things to be logically connected. And if I say something, I'd like to know that there's something to back it up. So when Trump is saying to all of his people, law and order and Hillary, lock her up, they're so corrupt and all the rest, and then you go, but Trump administration has had 215 criminal indictments. How can you be the law and order person when your own house is this rotten? But you can't. I'm convinced what this has shown in politics is, maybe this is social media, maybe it's, we all live in our own, self-confirming silos, that you can't, there's no way to get rationally through to certain people. They believe what they believe, and there have been studies that there are personality types where no amount of evidence will convince them otherwise. And in fact, the more evidence you throw at them that their position is wrong, the more they get defensive and the more they entrench in that position. So when you say, like, well, Trump's a crook, I said, no, he is, you know, law and order, and he's cleaning, you know, he's draining the swamp and he's cleaning things up, and those Democrats are the crooks, and go, well, if you look at the facts, that just isn't true. But, you know, for you and me, if we have a position and someone says, well, you know, there are studies that show this isn't the case. And, you know, they're good studies and they're by impartial people. And, you know, it's a clear trend. It makes me rethink my position. And, yeah. You know, and I think that's an adult thing. You know, you get challenged on something, someone presents you with better evidence. You go, oh, okay, I guess I was wrong.
Well, I think that the reason that Trump is able to talk about law and order is that his law and order is a code. What law and order means to him and to his supporters is keeping Black people in prison and putting more of them there. Because according to them, Black people are the cause of crime in the United States. And when he's talking about law and order, he's not talking about law and order for him. He's not talking about law and order in general. He's not talking about upholding the rule. He's not like a sheriff that rode into a town that had no sheriff, and here he is going to impose law and order so that there's some sense of order and stability in town. He's talking about keeping people of color down, keeping them where they belong. That's what law and order means to him. That's why whenever there's been protests over police killings of unarmed civilians, unarmed people of color, Trump has never said anything in response to what a tragedy that is. Instead, he comes out and criticizes the protesters and talks about law and order, because to him, these people of color are getting uppity.
Yeah, and he's not even very subtle about it. I mean, on the campaign trail, he was doing a lot of his campaign whistle stops in sort of the edge of suburban areas of major municipal centers, and he was saying, you should thank me because I'm protecting the suburbs. I am, those other guys, the criminal element's going to come in here. They're going to put in high density housing, and they're going to put in poor Black people, is what he was saying. He didn't use the word Black, but everyone knew exactly what he was talking about. And, he was basically saying, if it wasn't for me, you'll have, Black murderers and rapists running up and down in the suburbs where all these white people are, all these decent, hardworking people are just trying to live. And therefore you should vote for me. I mean, forget that it's not true anymore, because the suburbs in the United States are becoming more and more multicultural, multiracial, a healthy mix of people from all kinds of, it's still fairly rich in a lot of American suburbs. Have you ever been to like Willamette or some of those, outside of Chicago? There's some really nice neighborhoods. But it wasn't even a dog whistle. He was just coming out and saying it, just saying like, if you don't vote for me, then Black people are going to move into your neighborhood and it'll be nothing but crack houses and prostitutes on every corner. And you'd think Americans would be smart enough to realize this at some point, but it clearly resonates with some people's fears, that are not real. Because, you look at the statistics, crime statistics for whether it's the suburbs or the cities and who's doing crimes and all the rest. It just, his reality is not reality, but it is the reality for some people who, continue to live in these, self-fulfilling fantasy worlds.
Well, it's what they said about Steve Jobs, that he had a reality distortion field around him. And he only believed within that field what he chose to believe. And we've got, and you can say people on the left have that too, but it is far more permeable than the people on the right, who have just locked themselves away in a Fox News silo and have taken what Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson said as being fact, even though whenever they're sued and they go to court, they say, oh no, we're just entertainers. We're not actual news people. But people take them as being credible. And so they surround themselves hearing only what it is they want to hear, confirming only their worst fears. And so they have this notion that Black people are criminals. And the notion is that if Black people are criminals, therefore they move into our neighborhoods. Our neighborhoods are gonna, our property values are gonna go down. And you know what? They very well might, because of the fact that the property values are based on who wants to move into the neighborhood. And who wants to move into the neighborhood? Well, if you're rich white bigots, you won't want to. And so your property value will go down. It's, you know, it's a self-fulfilling reality there in the United States, where even people I know who claim they're not racist are racist, according to Canadian terms, and not oversensitive terms, but people who say things like, oh, that's just the way they are. I don't hate them for it. That's just the way they are. And they say it about Blacks. They say it about Latinos. They say it about Jews. They, you know, I don't hate them. It's like, they can't help being, you know, A, criminals, B, whatever. It's just how they are. I don't hate them for it. You know, that adaptation of the hate the sin, not the sinner,
yep,
kind of thing. And they think that's not being racist, but they are racist. And 71 million Americans are okay with racism. That's why this racism problem in the U.S., I don't know how long it would take for it to retire. It's certainly not something that can be forced away, because it requires education and exposure to people of different backgrounds. And when you're in a small town, you may not have that. And, you know, you stick to your old ways because you think that's, you know, that's my way my father and my grandfather and my great grandfather lived. And there's an appeal in that. And they don't want to see modern thinking infect their community. And to them, modern thinking is more progressive thinking, more progressive on issues of race. And to them, that modernity is something to be feared and turned away. So they're actually hostile to thoughts of modernity and thoughts of racial tolerance, racial acceptance. So when you've got half a country's voters okay with racism, the election of one president and a vice president who is a woman of color and child of immigrants, that's not going to change anything. Just the same way making Barack Obama president didn't change the reality of racism in America. It might have put a sharper point on it, in fact, because people came right out and said they didn't like Obama because he was Black. There was people on the right who were very definitely unabashedly expressing racist sentiments. Yeah. So when you've got 71 million people giving an endorsement to a racist president, you've got a problem that runs so deep. I often wonder whether that problem can be fixed, or and if so, maybe it's just a matter of time. Keep pushing away, but don't expect anything to change in our lifetime substantially.
No, and you know, and again, when, as I was saying earlier, you know, I'm of belief, you know, in rational thought, and you know, you present me with new information, and I'll if it's compelling, I'll adjust my opinions accordingly. And you know, as you know, having grown up as a small L liberal, part of the tenets of liberalism has always been that, you know, if you give people opportunity and education, and you give them access to good information, and people will make good choices. You have to overcome a lot of the things. I mean, there's socioeconomic disadvantages. So, you have scholarships and you have support systems and all kinds of things in order to allow people to become the best possible thems in a society. I mean, that's sort of real classical liberalism. And, you know, I'm having to reevaluate that, because we live in an age now. There's an internet meme out there that says, you know, remember when we thought that, people making bad choices was the result of not having, enough good information at their fingertips? Turns out that was wrong. Yeah. Because, we have all this great information out there now. I mean, Sure, there's all kinds of clutter. There's all, there's the Breitbarts, there's the Trumps, the Fox News, which is even looking at itself. There's the Murdoch empire. There's all kinds of big and small, misinformation places out there right now. But there is good information out there. I mean, unbiased, scientific, compelling, well-researched information that's available to everybody now, because Everyone's got a cell phone in their pocket that has access to the internet. Unless you're in the remotest parts of the world, you can still get the news. You can get access to scholarly articles, to libraries, to more information than humans have had access to in the entire history of humanity. And still, we believe incredibly stupid stuff. We're still taking cinnamon challenges and doing epic fails and just endangering our lives, both physically and spiritually, because we make all these bad decisions because we choose to believe all this crap out there, whether it's vitamins or homeopathy, or I don't know how many more people I can get mad at me if I just talk about sort of the crap ideas that are out there. But people believe this stuff, and you can't convince them otherwise, even though all the information is out there. So education, the big thing about the Democrats and the Liberals here in Canada is we think, if a better educated voter is going to see the light. And it's like, no, that's not true. There's lots of you see some highly educated people. You see Ben Carson, who's a neurosurgeon. I think is he the neurosurgeon?
He's a neurosurgeon. He's
the neurosurgeon.
I think he's a bit of a savant, though.
God, he's got to be, because he believes this crazy, crazy stuff. But he's went through medical school and he monkeys around in people's brains. And you go like, well, how can you be that smart and that dumb at the same time?
Because people can be.
Yeah. Well,
we can be. People can be smart and dumb at the same time, because we are masters at editing our own brains. We have to be, because that's how we go. We move on from tragedies and so on. Mm-hmm. We eventually edit out the pieces that are, we don't eliminate them, but we edit them out to the point where we've put them in a back drawer. That's how we manage to move on from difficulties, from challenges, from fall, failures and so on, deaths and breakups and things like that. Brains self-edit. And so we can be both smart and stupid at the same time. I think more than education, as far as teaching people specific facts at school, which has its importance, what schools need to teach is how to learn, and put the emphasis on how you learn and emphasis on critical thinking skills. I think that's what people really need, is critical thinking skills and an emphasis on them and a reverence for them, because education is really just spitting back what it is you've been told. That's not thinking, that is reciting. And what we need are people who are willing to challenge and willing to take a look at something and look at it from a different perspective and look at all the perspectives and try to make some sense out of it using some critical thinking faculties. That's what's lacking, is the emphasis on critical thinking skills. That's what really is missing. And the emphasis on reading, writing, arithmetic is wrongheaded, because it's important to get the basics of those things, but a lot of the stuff you learn is not necessarily necessary in life. There are so many things I can list that I learned going through school, which I've had zero use for my entire life. And
come on, you were using trigonometry just the other day. I'm sure you were.
Oh, listen, I use Pythagorean theorem every time I have to figure out how long it takes me to get to the store and back. But the fact is that what's important in schools is learning how to learn and learning how to apply critical faculties to subject matter. That's the most important thing. And that's what has been pushed aside with all of this emphasis on the three R's and back to basics. The most basic thing has to be critical thinking.
Yeah, well, and the other thing too, you get the right now goes crazy about this being socialism and social engineering and all the rest, but just teaching people basic compassion, understanding. A lot of that, some people say, that's a luxury, that you can grow up, you don't have time for things like that if you live in a hard scrabble kind of existence, or if you grow up in a family where your parents are, people grow up in all kinds of different situations. Alcoholism or mental illness, not everyone is given the same start in life and the opportunity to learn all of those social skills. But to learn those sorts of things, about just being decent to each other, I mean, I think there's that was a real divide in the United States as well. I mean, people who wanted to treat each other decently, whether you agreed with the way they lived or not. I mean, you know, Biden's a Catholic, the same way Justin Trudeau and Pierre Trudeau were raised Catholic. You know, Justin and Pierre were actually schooled by Jesuits. But that didn't stop them from being compassionate about certain social issues. Pierre Trudeau famously did a lot to decriminalize homosexual activity, to legalize abortion, to make it easier to get divorced, all these things that were completely contrary to the Catholic creed. And Biden, it's taken him a while sometimes to come around because these things don't happen overnight. But, he has become much more open to the LGBT rights and all the rest. And, a proponent of Roe versus Wade in the United States, reproductive rights, which isn't part of the Catholic creed. But he also understands that his religion shouldn't necessarily shape what other people do. It's a great way to run your own life. I mean, if you don't believe in abortion, don't have one. But you don't believe in abortion, don't force someone else to not be able to have an abortion. Because the world is bigger than that, and your personal beliefs shape your own life. But it's not the kind of thing you can impose on other people. And that's something that Trudeau, Justin and Pierre understood. They live their own lives according to their own beliefs, but they realize that they when you're in power, that you are representing more people and that you have to respect other people's views. American Christianity doesn't do that. I mean, it should be a force for compassion and for kindness and understanding and openness towards other people of other cultures. I mean, the whole New Testament's about being nice to the Samaritan and the person at the side of the road. But American Christianity has grown to become a mean-spirited, narrow-minded, It defends the putting of children in cages in the United States. And it's like, well, how does that square with your belief? Where is the compassion? Because, you can quote the Bible chapter and verse. You can go to, the mega churches. You can testify. You can all the rest. But where's the compassion that should be driving you? And that was the real divide I saw between the Democrats and the Republicans. And while the Republicans supposedly wear their faith on their sleeve, the party of decency and compassion was not them. It was the Democrats.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you hit on it when you said American Christianity, because there is a form of Christianity that is very, very American. It's a form of, some of it's that prosperity Christianity. Yep. Jesus wants you to have a big house and car.
Yep.
It's stuff that doesn't really have root in the teachings of Jesus. It's stuff that is morphed from the American ethic of get as much as you can for yourself as fast as you can. America is a very selfish culture. The whole American dream is founded upon self-interest, not enlightened self-interest, which is a good thing. But self-interest, enlightened self-interest, for example, is paying taxes so you don't have people reduced to desperate poverty, so you don't have to worry about being robbed on the street. That's enlightened self-interest. But they just have self-interest in the States. They only care about themselves. They don't see how providing through taxes or doing anything that's based in compassion can possibly better their financial situation. And what it comes down to in the States is bettering their financial situation. The business of America is business. I think it was Eisenhower who said that. And that is what it's about. And because we are spiritual beings, spiritual creatures, many of us, they had to find a way to put a heavenly tint on that massive drive for consumption and acquisition. Because you don't want to seem like you're completely out of step with anything spiritual and anything that, speaks to your higher power. And so they ascribe the higher power to how much money you make. And those who don't make money, it's their own fault because they're lazy, because they had the opportunity to do so, because everyone does in America. It's such a nonsensical view of America, and it is a very American form of Christianity. What true Christianity would turn its back on the stranger, would turn its back on those in need, would put children in cages? This is not a Christianity that has anything to do with Christ. This is Christianity in name only. It is an American religion. America has a civic religion, and included in that are rituals like college football games and things of that nature. America has a civic religion. There's no question to it, and it supersedes any teachings of actual Christianity.
No, and you know, of course, the thing about the Bible is you can cherry pick all you like and find little bits and pieces to justify all kinds of other things. Well, you're missing the entire message of yes, the New Testament, which was basically Jesus saying, you know, be nice to each other. That's his, you know, that's the message. It's not a hard one. But it's the one that everyone seems to especially in the United States, just ignore in favor of, like you say, the prosperity gospel and like you said, there's tons and tons of things in the Bible about welcoming the stranger. I mean, in the Old Testament, there's tons and tons of things about welcome the stranger, because remember that you were once kicked out of Israel and a stranger among other people. There's tons and tons of that stuff, but no one seems to care about that. And they get to clothe themselves in this version of Christianity, which the early Christians would never have recognized in a million years, just because it is so selfish and self-centered and grasping. I mean, the parable of they asked Jesus why he hung out with sinners and prostitutes and tax collectors, who were considered the lowest of the low. Mm-hmm. And Jesus said, well, if you're a healthy person, you don't need a doctor. These are all people who need help. And United States has made a national religion out of turning their back on people who need the help. And it really has become this divide. I mean, we saw it. I don't know if I'm always struck by the sense, and it happens a little bit in Canada too, when you see the election results, the center left parties dominate all the cities, all the urban areas. Mm-hmm. And the Republicans or conservatives dominate the rural and the more suburban areas. And a lot of that seems to be a correlation with where, like you said, where you're exposed to multicultural communities, where your neighbors are more likely to not look like you than look like you, that you go out on the restaurant row and it's not it's not just Swiss Chalet. I love Swiss Chalet, by the way, but it's a pizza place. It is it's Indian, it's Ethiopian, it's Tamil, it's you name it. You're exposed to sort of the food court version of internationalism, and you get more educated people. You get it's tough to live in the city without a lot of professionals in there. You get a lot of doctors, accountants, lawyers, teachers, the people who can afford to live in the cities, and they tend to be a little more educated, a little more worldly, a little more better traveled, and a little more likely to be accepting of a plural society. So you see that in the United States. I mean, all the hot spots in the United States for the Democrats were centered around major urban centers, and it really has become a divide of urban versus rural, the way it has been in Canada as well.
Yeah, and It's sad to see that there are factions around the edges here that have adopted Trumpism, but they are fringe groups at this point in time, and I can't see half the country supporting putting children in cages, conservative or not. I just don't think that it's in our DNA. Our conservatism has traditionally been a much softer form and less driven by wealth acquisition. And it's changing, there's no question. It's becoming more like conservatism to the South, but it isn't there yet. And I can't see even conservative supporters supporting any prime minister, even if it was their own, for putting children in cages, for example. I just can't see that getting endorsed by the electorate. And but we can't get cocky because this kind of thing doesn't come all at once. It's drips and drabs until there's a lot more there than you realized was there. And then you got to deal with it. That's the problem with the states is they never deal with their problems. They just deny that they're there. And we have to make sure that we don't do that here.
No, and you know, and Trump, you know, is defeated, will be defeated finally when they you know finish all of the spurious court challenges and count all the ballots and you know the dust all settles. But you know, you're still left with 71 million Americans who think a certain way. You know, and you know, there's going to be a hardcore of Trumpism, Republicanism. I don't think Trumpism will really, you know, survive the end of Trump. I mean, because I think Trump will just kind of slink off into the sunset and get a penthouse suite at some nice non-extraditable country, like you know he'll be in the Dubai Hilton or something, or you know, or in Belarus or somewhere for the remainder of his life. And these kinds of you know cults of personalities don't generally survive the end of the personality themselves. So at the end of Trump, I think Trumpism will disappear. But you know, there's been this line from you know from Reagan that gave birth to the Tea Party, and the Tea Party you know morphed in the United States into you know was harnessed by the Trumpist party that became a big tent for both you know the Tea Partyists and the Second Amendment people and the militias and the white nationalists and this unholy collection of terrible people, you know, who, you know, Hillary Clinton called the deplorables. And, you know, it was politically not very correct, but I think, you know, it was quite
actually
accurate.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, there's some things you just can't say if you're in the middle of an election campaign, you know, in insulting, you know, a big bunch of voters might be one of them. But, you know, he basically became the lightning rod that pulled together all of these disparate group of right-wing supremacist nut bars, and you know big money too. I mean you know the dark money that was coming in from you know whether it's the Koch brothers or Sid Adelson down
in Vegas.
You know there's all these family funds that you know work behind the scenes, you know, with the political action committees and the direct funding of campaigns, and the think tanks and all the rest of the stuff. It sort of became this witch's brew of things in the United States, and that's still going to be there. I mean, the rich people are still rich, and they're still interested in pursuing you know politicians who can preserve their wealth and reduce their taxes and not make them clean up their toxic spills or. Right. Or pay off, you know, people whose patent medicines have been horribly deformed, you know, innocent people. There's always going to be that kind of bare knuckled capitalism in the United States. But you'd hope that the you know some of the worst elements don't have this unifying force anymore. You know, without a champion, you'd hope that white nationalism becomes marginalized again. There'll still be those people out there, but you know they won't be emboldened by you know someone in the White House, and you hope maybe it just kind of you know becomes a hobby as opposed to a profession for a lot of people, but you know they're still going to be there, and you know 4 more years of Trump, I think that would have been the end of the United States. It would have become a failed state. Its basic institutions would have been dismantled. The rule of law would have been gone. It would become like Belarus, or you know any one of you know Kyrgyzstan or any of those former failed Soviet states, where you have a strong man, a grasping oligarchy, and you know a sham election. And I don't think America would have recovered. So, you know, Biden, you know, not, you know, he was everybody's second or third choice at the end of the day, but God, you know, a much better choice than the abyss that America was standing on the edge of.
Absolutely true, and all well spoken, and I think we'll bring it in for a landing there. We'll have to just, I mean, it's still unfolding in the U.S. It'll probably still be unfolding next week and probably the week after that. You know, unfolding as far as the desperation of the Trump side. The Biden camp is just going on as if, you know,
they're just ignoring it as if, you know, it's a done deal. And I think that's maybe the best way to deal with it.
It probably is. Don't give any air. Don't give any oxygen.
And all of these cases that they're bringing about electoral fraud, I mean, two things. There is no electoral fraud. I mean, it's so small. I mean, there's a ton of state, U.S. Department of Justice, looking at instances of federal election fraud, looked at, you know, the 2002-2004 federal elections, and found that, now I've got to get the zeros right, that 0.0000013% of ballots cast were fraudulent. I'm not even sure how many that is. Yeah, that is like a it's less than a millionth.
It ain't enough to affect an election.
No, exactly. So, you know, Trump is doing this just to keep himself relevant and actually, frankly, to fundraise on, because they're fundraising for their election fraud fund. But, you know, frankly, it's going to pay off.
Was it 50 or 60% that is going to pay off his campaign debt?
Well, if you read the fine print, it says 100% of it could go to the campaign debt, depending on what this is going to cost. But
yeah,
you know, even if any of these things were successful, none of them, you know, recounts basically only move the ballot number 500 in either direction. And there aren't any states where 500 is going to sway the outcome. And electoral fraud, there just isn't any of it. It's just more, you know, it's more red meat trying to keep Trump in front of everyone until he finally has to, you know, be dragged kicking and screaming from the Resolute desk by the Secret Service.
And that may happen. Well, we will keep our eyes peeled, no doubt. This is a very interesting drama, but I prefer my dramas to be scripted and on television, where I know that the ending is going to be something that's favorable. I don't like real life drama. Stephen, thank you very much.
Hey, always a pleasure.
And I want to thank all of you for listening. Don't forget, if you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com. If you want to become a monthly supporter, patreon.com/FUNetworkTV. And if you want to give us a one-time boost on PayPal, that's very appreciated. You can go there at our email address, funetworktv@gmail.com. Stephen, thank you.
Always a pleasure. I mean, you know, we thought we were going to do this. You know, we were optimists. We thought we were going to do this this podcast, you know, Wednesday of last week when everyone knew what the outcome was going to be. And it's like,
such fools.
So we'll see if we know next week who the real winner is. Well, we know who the real winner is. Yeah. We'll just, you know, whether or not they've actually tied a big bow around it.
Well, we will wait and see with bated breath. Thank you for listening. This has been Stephen and Stephen on the Fun Network.